1000-watt News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 16th of March, Anno Domini 2008, one day after the Ides of March. And you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm David Reich.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And at 7 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff you can use, things
Wait
you can
minute.
Lose.
We're missing the headband.
We are. We have no headband today.
No headband today, guys. Sorry.
Unbelievable. So instead we get hair. Hair and eyes.
There you go.
Eyebrows.
The bobblehead. That's all we see is the head going up and down. We yes. know she's still there.
Rob Linton is one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Midwest. And we have the magnificent Jessica Sawyer taking his place. Certainly better for us in terms of Rob's personality. You know, I am not. He's probably not listening. All right, the notorious spammer that authorities dubbed the King of Spam is facing a possible 26-year jail sentence after pleading guilty in Seattle on Friday to charges of fraud and tax evasion. Robert Soloway, 28 years old, has already been found guilty of spam charges in several civil cases. Microsoft, for example, won a $7.8 million judgment against him in 2005. Thank heaven, because we were worried about their viability. But has avoided paying fines in those cases. The criminal charges to which he pleaded guilty on Friday followed his arrest in 2007 by the U.S. Justice Department. In a 2005 discussion group post, Soloway bragged, "I've been sued for hundreds of millions of dollars and have had my business running for over 10 years without ever paying a dime, regardless of the outcome of any lawsuits." That year, Soloway raked in more than $300,000 from his spam operations, according to his plea agreement. Soloway has avoided fines in the past, but this time around, he may not be so lucky. In addition to the jail time he now faces, he has also agreed to discuss his financial assets while being monitored by a lie detector. While there have been hundreds of spam prosecutions in the U.S., it is extremely rare for spammers to face criminal charges, and those involved in the matter say that Soloway's case could serve as a deterrent to other spammers. In an interview last month, Microsoft senior attorney Aaron Kornblum said he thought the prosecution would make other spammers think twice. "There have not been a large number of criminal spam prosecutions in the U.S., he said. This is significant. Soloway is set to be sentenced on June 20th. The prosecution has been seeking $700,000 in damages when Soloway was first charged nearly a year ago. I really hope this guy gets his 26 years in prison and $700,000 in fines, because I would very much like to see somebody who gets involved in spam get dinged just a little bit. That would make me happy."
Yeah, but how many people jumped in his place to take over the void that he filled?
And then we sue them, and then we sue them, and then we sue them, and then we sue them.
Is he being punished for spamming, or is he being punished because he's a spammer?
He's being punished for spamming.
Because you said tax evasion. That's not spamming.
No, that's true, but that's just one of many.
To all the criminals out there, please make sure you report your income on criminally related activities,
and
then the IRS can't come after you.
You would think that Al Capone would have given everybody the clue for that.
He set the standard.
Right. It's not just tax evasion, it's also fraud. And the fraud part is the spamming part.
Yeah, it's, most of spam is fraudulent spam designed for identity theft or just stealing your money. It's almost sad that there isn't more true spam. Now, what if I want a low mortgage rate? How can I get a real low mortgage rate?
Well, right. You never actually know that, do you? We're trying to get Dave. Here's Chad Stella. See it? Under tools?
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
Trying to get Dave into the chat here. And
trying to get Uncle
trouble.
Dave into the chat. You have to.
You should give the chat address for those people.
You might not be.
Or I will, because we're. Technical support here. If you go to the Soundbites homepage, right on the front of the page, there's a join our chat command, and you can join into the chat and comment on things that are happening and make your own suggestions when we're fumbling here with our own technical expertise.
All right. I can't help you right now because I'm trying to talk. But we're trying to get Dave into the forum. We have an online chat. It's It's on IRC, and you can either join, as Steve said, through the Soundbites page or otherwise. Apparently, our IP address here at the studio has been blocked for some reason. I don't know what that's all about, but that's okay. But yeah, we've got this whole interesting spam problem. Spam is increasing exponentially. I look at we run our own mail server in the E. Philip Saunders College of Business at the Rochester Institute of Technology. And yeah, I didn't need the breath because I didn't add in that I'm the systems administrator at.
And you've been working out.
And I've been working out. Back before my hiatal hernia, I could sing massive amounts of song without taking a breath. But not anymore.
Those 12-ounce curls help.
Yeah, exactly right. Oh, curls. I thought you said bruise. I was confused.
12-ounce
bruise.
Curls.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I got that.
Okay.
But I watched the spam count. We do all these charts and graphs because they're pretty. And I watched the spam count go up and up and up and up. Now, we've got all kinds of products like Spam Assassin and all that stuff running to keep us from seeing it. But we throw away well over 90% of the mail that comes in. It's known spam. Before it even gets to our filters, right, it goes through Spam Assassin, which goes to Spam House and a couple of other places and gets their list. And we kill hundreds of thousands of messages a day, and it just keeps on growing. You wonder sometimes why it's so slow, the internet is so slow, or your mail is so slow getting to you. It's all the spam.
Yeah. Yeah, the networks have to keep building the thicker and thicker backbones, and it's just to run the spam.
Right, right. That's exactly
right.
They
wouldn't have to do that were it not for the spam.
That's exactly right. And it's a terrible thing. So here's something that you folks need to be aware of. You need to be aware of spam. And I know that you think you are, but a lot of you are still clicking on things. If you see, the problem is it's not just clicking on a link. It's actually opening the spam.
Which you can do if you have your preview window open. You don't even have to double-click the message to open it. If you have a preview window where you click on it once and you see the message, it is open.
Yep, that's exactly right. Steve, I see you're in the chat area.
On his nice new shiny computer, I'll add.
On his nice new shiny computer, this is the...
Actually, it's not as shiny as the silver one. This is a dull plastic. I had a shiny silver one.
That's right, you did. Well, what model is this?
This is the MacBook model, 13-inch widescreen MacBook. Just no suffix after it. It's just the Mac.
Now, is that the quick disconnect for the power?
Yeah, it's got the magnetic power adapter on it, so when you trip over the cord, it doesn't yank your computer down to the floor.
That is very cool.
Although I did see this week someone has released a product that plugs into the port next to the power adapter and holds the power adapter in place, thereby defeating the quick release mechanism. If you want to trip over the cord and pull the computer down to the floor.
Well, it's nice that they give you the choice.
Yeah.
That's what makes America great.
That's exactly it. I'm all about choice myself, so I'm thrilled to see that sort of thing going on. But yeah, there's two things. Well, several things. Nobody expects a Spanish Inquisition. First, never reply to spam.
Yeah.
Secondly,
clicking on that thing that says click here to remove is the worst thing you can do.
Right. Where it says click here to remove or remove me from spam. One of them was stop email spam cease desist whatever it was .com. And I thought, yeah, good. Never click on those. That just means that not only are you the sort of person who reads email, you're the sort of person who'll click on a link in email. They've just quadrupled the amount of spam you're going to get.
And just because the message comes from somebody you know, don't believe it. Because there are a lot of spam, a lot of viruses that masquerade as someone else. So, Aunt Effie sent me a picture. So you click it open and it's not Aunt Effie and it's not a picture you want to see. And it just added you to junk mail list.
Well, the biggest thing, though, is what I tell folks is if you have to stop and think twice about it, then don't.
Right.
Because the minute you have to hesitate and think, do I really want to do that? Don't. Pick up the phone and call them. If it's really somebody that, you know, you think, whether it's a bank, a relative, or anything else, pick up the thing they call the telephone. It's been around a lot longer than the computer, and people will still answer at the other end. And you can verify it. That's the best thing to do is verify it. I mean, there was a number of folks that got into this scam of thinking, it looked like an official bank.
Yeah,
I mean, they grabbed the watermarks and everything else.
And there's a bunch of postal spams going around now and telephone spams. With the federal tax rebate thing coming out next month, people are getting phone calls and letters saying that you have to call this phone number so we can confirm your Social Security number in order to send you your rebate check for, what, $1,200, is it, for married couples?
Yeah.
And you don't have to do that. If you file your tax return this year, you get the check automatically.
Yeah.
But people are falling. You know, all it takes is one. That was a big thing about direct marketing, because, you know, I worked with a lot of advertisers. Direct postal marketing, there's a physical cost involved with mailing it and stuffing envelopes and whatnot. So they say a 1% response is good. You send out 1,000 units. If you get, you know, 10 back, that's good. I know that was 10%. So one back. Yeah. So with junk email and spam, if they get one response, they can send millions of messages very easily and at no cost. If they get one response back, right, they've made their money.
Right. All right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Wright, Jessica Sawyer, and me. I'm Nick Francesco. You are listening to Soundbites at 18 minutes after the hour on 1180 WHAM. We'll be back just in a couple of minutes with your phone calls. So if you're on the line, stay on the line. If you're not on the line, why not? I have no idea why you wouldn't be calling us in. It's a snowy,
kind of funky day.
Kind of a punky day, but so you're all indoors anyway.
Like
you might as well
Rochester.
Give us a call. Give us a call.
Yeah,
and we'll,
well, we're getting anxious for spring. You know, everybody's getting that itch right now. Yesterday was the St. Denis Day Parade, and, you know.
Oh, my God. Do not get me started on the St. Patrick's Day Parade.
Oh, you had a good time?
I could not get past it.
And you're wearing green. You're the only one of us wearing green today.
I got caught in a swirl of traffic that ended up with me looping around by the Holiday Inn for hours and hours and hours. I hated every stinking moment of it. Back in just a couple of minutes on Soundbites. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Before we get to the phones, here's one that amuses and makes me happy. An Oregon woman whose lawsuit against the Recording Industry Association of America, the RIAA, was thrown out by a federal judge last month, plans to file an amended complaint in a move that could finally force the industry group to share details about its controversial techniques for investigating alleged file sharers. The closely watched case involves Tanya Anderson, a disabled single mother who in June 2005 was accused by the RIAA of illegally downloading and distributing copyrighted music files. The case, Atlantic Recording versus Anderson, was voluntarily dropped by the RIAA in August 2007 amid a flurry of counterclaims by Anderson, who accused the organization of malicious prosecution, libel, negligence, invasion of privacy, electronic trespass, and fraud. After the lawsuit was dropped by the RIAA, Anderson was allowed by the court to drop her counterclaims and file them instead as a direct legal action against the RIAA. That lawsuit was filed in August 2007 and charged the RIAA and five music labels with a string of misdeeds. Anderson's lawsuit included charges that the record labels had used unlicensed investigators to illegally gather evidence against her and that the RIAA had violated the Racketeering Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act, the RICO Act. Wouldn't it be great if the RIAA got the RICO Act? Anderson's suit was dismissed on February 19th by Oregon District Court Judge Anna Brown. In a ruling, Brown said that Anderson had failed to adequately state her claims for relief and gave her until March 14th to file an amended complaint clearly identifying the legal basis for each of her claims. The judge also noted the court would not permit any more motions to dismiss the case by the RIAA. Yeah, yeah. That means if Anderson's amended complaint passes muster, the RIAA will be forced for the first time in its pursuit of illegal music sharers to disclose its investigative technique. We are going to have discovery. That's important because the RIAA has spent 3 years actively refusing to provide any discovery of any significance in the growing number of cases. It is very important for them to operate in secrecy because once their methodology is revealed, it will be obvious they committed a crime. According to Lori Liebeck, who's the attorney for Anderson, the amended complaint will ask the RIAA to provide details on a variety of issues, including how exactly Media Sentry goes about collecting its evidence against alleged copyright infringers when the RIAA first engaged Media Sentry to carry out such investigations and how it decides which file sharers to sue. Such information is likely to be of immense value to the thousands of other individuals who have been sued by the RIAA over the past 3 years in its aggressive campaign against alleged copyright infringers. So we will see shortly, if not soon, exactly what's going to go on with that. I'm pretty astounded that this lady, God bless her, she's a disabled mom. She hasn't been doing anything. And we've got her downloading all this stuff. Her kids are babies. They're not doing it. She certainly didn't do it. And so now she's suing them for everything, you know, everything from malicious slander to mopery. She's just got it all in there. And now it's all going to go to court and we'll see what the RIAA says about it.
And that sounds great. I hope she has the resources to make this all happen.
Well, I... Yeah, yeah. What?
Isn't the EFI helping her?
Yeah, they are. EFF, the Electronic Freedom Foundation.
Yeah, Electronic Frontier Foundation.
Right.
Yeah, this is fascinating on a technological and a legal level. I may make a point to follow this.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll see what happens. All right. Our first caller today is Tim from Greece, New York. Welcome, Tim. What's your question?
Hi, guys and lady. Thank you for taking my call. I have Office 2002. And every time I open up an application, Word or Excel or whatever, they ask me to reinstall, and then it looks for a prorate.msi file, which is not on the disk.
Prorate?
Something like that. I'm in my car, so I'm not exactly what
right. I'm
prorate, prorate, something, .msi. And that there is no such file on the disk.
An MSI file is usually a file that you download or get off a disk. And it's an installation file.
Yes, I realize that. I did look on the net, and there seems to be a lot of people with the problem, but no solutions that I could find.
Well, first, have you danced the security tango?
Not in a long time.
I would suggest you start there, because if it's something called prorate.msi, it's very possible that what it is a plugin for Excel that's
okay,
trying to run.
It happens on any one of the Microsoft.
Well, yeah, they're all interrelated. The only difference between,
same company.
The only difference in the code is the front end.
Okay.
Which is why you can put an Excel spreadsheet in a document or copy and paste from the document to the Excel. So it's all the same thing. And what it sounds like is happening is it's attempting to load some sort of add-in to Excel. You might want to check in Excel and see what macros are being run and what add-ins have been installed. See if you can remove those. If it's a legitimate one, you'll be able to remove it. If you don't see any or you can't remove one, it's probably some sort of virus. And the best way, easiest way to get rid of it is to dance the tango.
I had one at JS Downloader. Man, that is a bear to get the heck out of a machine.
Yep. So at any rate, that's the deal.
Okay, well, I appreciate it. I will start with that.
Thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Our next caller is Mike from Palmyra, New York. Welcome, Mike. What's your question? Mike?
Yes. Hello?
Yes.
Yeah. Can you hear me okay now?
Yes. Can you hear me now?
Yep.
Do you know that guy never gets to talk in his commercials anymore? He hasn't actually said, can you hear me now, for about 3 years.
Somebody once posted.
I've heard that too.
Someone once posted a analysis of different commercials, and the spokesperson life cycle. When they become a spokesperson, they talk all the time. And then the less and less they talk, the more likely it is they're going to get replaced.
Yeah,
so
that's what
that
I'm worried
poor guy's about out
like
of a job.
I like that guy.
Yeah.
All right, go ahead. What's your problem, Mike?
Okay, I run an iBook D4.
Yes.
Mac. And I recently updated the software. But since I've updated the software, I get this error message all the time. No matter where I go on the web, I get unable to load a plugin.
What software did you update?
I updated my Safari software and my Mac software.
By Mac software, do you mean the operating system?
Yes.
Leopard?
No, I don't think so. Hang on, I'll tell you in just a moment. But the error message comes up, the page from the weatherchannel.com, Orbit, attempted to load plugins.
Right. Virtually every web page you go to has some sort of media content on it. And most of the time, that media content needs a plugin, whether it be the Flash plugin, the Windows Media Player plugin, the Reel plugin, the Shockwave plugin. So you need to, it should tell you which plugin it's missing, and you need to go to that website and download their plugin.
Okay.
So if you've updated your browser, it may need an updated version of the plugin.
Okay, it's the Shockwave Flash is the plugin that
So you have to go to Adobe's website and download the latest Flash player. And install that plugin so that you can play Flash and Shockwave files.
Uh-huh.
Most of Shockwave has been incorporated into Flash now. So that's at the Adobe website. In fact, that error message will often give you the link so you can directly go to the website for the plugin you need.
So if What are you saying? If I click on the error message, it'll give me a link because I don't see any.
Well, most of the time there's a link already there. If you don't see one, then you have to go to that website yourself. So, okay. And Flash is an Adobe product. So if you go to adobe.com and you can download the free Flash plugin.
Uh-huh. Okay, and will that be compatible with the software or anything?
You have to pick the right one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you pick the one for the Mac,
right. So it's
the G4.
Yeah, it's adobe.com/products/flash player, okay. And the latest version is 9.
And, of course, it's all one word. Flash player is all one word.
Okay, thank you very
much. And then,
Adobe.
I think, adobe.com is the company that does Flash. And then you have two options to download the Intel-based software or the PowerPC-based software. Since you're running an iBook, you're running the PowerPC, so you have to download option 2.
Okay.
So that's becoming tricky now on the Mac, that we haven't had to worry about what our processor is before. But now that some Macs use the IBM PowerPC and some Macs use the Intel Core, you have to pick the right version when you download software.
All right. Okay. Thank you very much.
Most companies do what's called universal. They have one program that works for both PowerPC and Intel, so users don't have to worry about it.
What that means is it's actually twice as big, right?
Yeah, but
and there's an extra loader on top of that.
Size
well, the PowerPC
convenient.
Version is 2 meg and the Intel version is 5 meg, so a 7 meg file wouldn't be that bad to download.
No, really,
not nowadays. Yeah. I mean, with, you know, high speed connection.
Yeah. Yeah, you still there?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Good. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Thank you.
There's a parody video, thank you, on YouTube.
I knew he'd get it eventually.
Yeah, it's the world's most boring job. A guy walks into an office, picks up the phone, and says, yes, 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 yes. For the love of God, yes, yeah. And then it takes 5 o'clock. He hangs up and walks out, meets the can you hear me now guy.
An interesting thing has actually just developed, and I don't know if I want to talk about this now because I don't remember if I actually made it a news item because I don't think that most of the news people. I'm just looking through my news items here. No, I did not. I'll talk a little bit about this now. Amazon has their own MP3 store, which is kind of a rival to iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
There has never been, and probably never will be, an iTunes for Linux. But there is an Amazon MP3 iTunes clone that goes to the Amazon MP3 store for Linux. And it's 99 cents a song. And, oh, by the way, they're all DRM-free.
And it's especially annoying.
You should explain, just for a second, explain DMR.
DRM is Digital Restriction Management.
Copy protection.
And it's copy protection so that you can't, for example, if you download a song from iTunes, you can put it on what, 5 devices or is it 3 devices?
Well, any
now?
Number of devices, but 5 computers.
Right. And then you're done.
They're trying to enforce the copy protection that you cannot legally buy a song or a CD and give a copy to a friend.
What a great segue. I'm just priming folks for the Uncle Dave story, which I want to do early, say 10-2, because I'm sure you gentlemen are both going to want to chime in.
We'll do it right when we come out of that break.
Okay.
All right.
This is a great segue leading into it, folks. I met a couple other folks at a talk I was giving, wanted to know, you know, what's the rant going to be this week? I said, stay tuned.
Right. And actually, I'll find the link to that Amazon MP3 player, and we'll put that up on our links list on the website. All right, for those of you who are unfamiliar with the story of Uncle Dave, at 10 of you'll know what it's all about. And for those of you who are familiar, strap yourselves in because it's going to be a bumpy ride.
Yes,
we will be back in just a couple of minutes. First, these delightful little advertisements to get you through the rest of your day.
Enriching your life.
We'll enriching your life. We'll be back with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, the mighty Jessica Sawyer, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, at 36 minutes after the hour. It's 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And at 40 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites. There's a New York Times report, about a Microsoft document from Dell, which was aptly named the Windows Vista Postmortem. In this March 25th, 2007 document, Dell states that the late OS code changes broke drivers and applications forcing key commodities to miss launch or limp out with issues. In the document, Dell went on to tell Microsoft that its Vista upgrade program needs a complete overhaul and that Microsoft should not change program requirements after release to OEMs, as changes are costly, time-consuming, and distracting. Even inside Microsoft, we now know that it realized that Vista was shipping, after Vista was shipping, that the OS really wasn't ready for prime time. Mike Nash emailed his crew on February 25th, 2007, that I personally got burned by the Intel 915 chipset issue that I bought personally, e.g. with my own money. He went on, I know that I chose my laptop, a Sony TX770P, because it had the Vista logo, and was pretty disappointed that not only wouldn't it run Aero Glass, but more importantly, it wouldn't run Movie Maker. As it was, Nash felt that he now has a $2,100 email machine. Steve Sinofsky, Microsoft Senior Vice President of Windows and Windows Live Engineering Group, himself, in a memo to Steve Ballmer, wrote on February 17th, 2007, that Vista was annoying customers for three reasons. These were, no one ever really believed we would ship, so they didn't start working on drivers until very late in 2006. Sinofsky himself confessed that his brother multifunction printer didn't have drivers at first, and even after they were available, it didn't have full functionality. Next up was the massive change in the underpinning for video and audio, which led to incompatibilities. Sinofsky cited the example of graphics cards that might be able to run Aero Glass, Microsoft's high-end graphics display, but only had XP drivers, which, of course, could never run Aero. Last, he mentioned that many XP drivers broke under Vista. This is across the board for printers, scanners, WAN, accessories, fingerprint readers, smart cards, TV tuners, and so on. That's bad. What's worse is that Microsoft wasn't even ready for its own hardware to run under Vista. Remember, Sinofsky is Microsoft's senior vice president of Windows. Sinofsky also wrote Microsoft's own hardware was missing a lot of support, for example, the media center extenders. As the New York Times noted, Joan Kalkman, the general manager of OEM and Embedded Worldwide Marketing, a week after Sinofsky's note, wrote, there is really nothing we can do in the short term. In the long term, we have worked hard to establish it and have committed to an OEM theme for Windows 7 planning. This is kind of a smoking gun, and as far back as 2007, we have known that Microsoft knew Windows Vista was broken and that it had problems, and they had, back in 2007, abandoned it to begin work on Windows 7.
Most of the features that were supposed to be in Vista were taken out, and to this date right now, you were touting all these extra features that you're going to be able to download and get for the Vista Ultima. To this day, still aren't available.
Well, I believe Dave Enright is correct when he said that it is the ME of the new of millennium. The
decade, yes.
Yeah. We were joking at the time with the Vista, what was it, Vista compatible badge that one of the several of the lawsuits are over. It never says which version of Vista it's compatible with.
Right.
It'll work fine with Home Basic, which is XP, because they have to strip everything else out.
Right. You can't run the Aero Glass.
That's the point.
All right,
I can't tell you how many people right now. Here's my little mini rant.
Well, before that, my the big rant is all the driver problems that Vista has. Yeah, Vista has been out for more than a year.
Yep.
Why aren't the drivers available by now?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But with me, it's the people who bought who tell me I'm having trouble running Vista, and then when you talk to them more, you realize what they mean is they can't get all the fancy dancy, cutesy wootsy junk that the operating system, that the graphical user interface does. And then you ask them, well, what kind of video card do you have? And when they finally fumble their way through that, you tell them, you'll never be able to run that stuff because your card can't do it. Then they argue with me.
Yeah. Yeah, we had a customer.
Well, it says it's Vista compatible. Yes, it is.
But you are running Vista.
Right, you are running Vista. Congratulations.
I had a customer.
If you are not going to take the answer I give you, why do you call me?
Right.
I had a customer bring a laptop in. It was running horribly slow with Vista. 512 meg of RAM, 16 megs of shared video.
Mm-hmm.
So Windows had 450 megs to play with.
Yeah, I got to ask both of you gentlemen, right now, like Dell, right now you can call there and you can get...
I love this.
A system, yep. Right?
They advertise it specifically with no crap on it.
Right. But no, I mean, you can get a system and it'll come with Vista Home, right? But the minute you say that you want XP,
yeah,
it's now $150 more, correct?
Yep.
All right. I still wonder, it baffles me, why somebody hasn't sued them. And what I mean by that is, wait a minute. If you're already selling me a system with Vista, then I should get that license along with the XP license. But they sell the system with just one license. where is that other license? Somebody is making a double profit on that license if you don't get both of them.
And the way to fix that is you get a model that is pre-configured with XP to start with, which you can do.
Right.
And then you don't get the Vista license and you don't have to pay extra for the XP license.
I've had some folks all sitting there
saying, well, because they picked a model that comes with Vista. And then you want XP, that's an additional purchase. So you just start and pick a model that just comes with XP, which people don't know. They look, they see the $299 ad on TV, and I want that one.
A couple of years ago, we had the return your license thing for Microsoft, all the Linux people who were saying, I'll never use this. Why don't you take it back? Microsoft did. I don't think they'll ever do it again.
No.
Well, this started out as a driver issue. Don't drivers come from the third party? Should Hewlett-Packard be writing their own drivers for their own printers?
But they still have to get the blessing from Microsoft.
It has to get the blessing from Microsoft.
Not the blessing, the APIs. Microsoft has to tell them how.
One of the things that was in that article I just read is that they keep changing the APIs. How can the third parties write drivers when the target keeps shifting?
Okay, so they're shooting at moving targets is the problem.
Right.
Gotcha.
Right. Well... that seems to push somebody's button. All our buttons.
Yeah, I was going to say, I created
mini Uncle Dave's.
The more I learn about Microsoft, the more I love Linux.
Yep.
Well, it's a challenge. I mean, it's really making it a challenge. Fun for us. I mean,
Windows 7 had better come out of the gate like the second coming, because
it's got to come out like Windows 98. Give me reasons why I would want to do it.
Right.
Like I said, when we went from 98 to XP, there were reasons to do it.
Yep.
You got to give me good reason.
Yep. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Wright, Jessica Sawyer. I'm Nick Francesco. It's 47 minutes after the hour, and you're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And at 52 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. All right, kiddies, it's that time once again. Get your footy jammies on, grab a mug of hot cocoa, sit in Indian style in a semicircle around the rocking chair. Because if we can slap them awake, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave!
Oh, you don't have to wake me up today.
He's been smiling over this.
All right, let me just first preface this by the views that are about to be expounded upon you folks in no way reflect the opinions or the policies of WHAM.
Or any right-thinking human
or any other facilities. But listen, Susie Q, you're breaking the law. And what I mean by that is, one, parents, get a backbone. You bring your computer in to have it repaired again because that little kid of yours wants to download music illegally. Hello? No. And I mean, just...
No, it's not still broken.
I got to stand up on this one. They literally got their machine infected again because they were using BearShare. Try to tell them, that's illegal. I get it. Like I say, bring back the days when you could give a kid a crack on the butt. Because this kid, 13-year-old, turns around and gives me one of those disgusting looks. Like you want to reach over the counter and just slap her?
Yeah.
It's like, and I said, but you're breaking the law. Oh, no, I'm not. I'm just sharing it with my friends. I said, she goes, like when they bring over a CD and I put it in my machine. I said, and you copy it to your hard drive? Yeah. Well, that's not breaking the law. She already paid for it. But you haven't.
Right.
Hello? It is not yours. And going to BearShare and LimeWire, yes, your machine is going to get infected, and yes, you are breaking the law. How many folks at RIT have already been nailed?
Many, many, many every day.
And in fact, it's such a non-event when the U.S. Marshals show up and confiscate somebody's computers, they don't bother reporting it anymore.
That's exactly right.
It happens so often.
That's exactly right.
But the parent is getting frustrated because the machine is all screwed up again. Yeah, it is, because I told you to keep the LimeWire and the BearShare off, and well, she only gets it for a few songs. I go, no, I looked at the log. She's been using it for the past 2 weeks.
Right. Downloading hundreds and hundreds of songs.
Oh,
not to steal your thunder, Dave, but I attended a seminar at MCC on this not too long ago.
Yep.
Last summer, I think it was. And there was a young man who stood up and said, well, we were taught to share our things. What's the problem with that? And I stood up and I said,
please.
You share what you own. You don't own that music.
You play it. You can play it out loud, but you
can lend to someone the CD, but you can't make another copy of it.
or right. when they sit there and they take right. the CD and read it into iTunes. You have effectively copied that all into that machine.
Would you go to the bookstore, buy a book, run to the photocopier, photocopy the book, and then
some people do that.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
No, what really
but see when it's electronic, it feels like it doesn't count.
But right. what ticked me off though is the parent was getting upset because the machine's right. infected. And this kid...
And you want to charge her again to clean it, didn't you?
Yeah, I'm feeling bad. But I mean, this kid is acting so smug. Like I say, I just wanted to slap her across
the
face.
Well, if the parents haven't got the backbone, then they'll just have to pay every week or two to have you,
you
fix
know what?
Their machine.
I mean, during my...
God bless them if they're willing to subsidize you that way.
In our day, you know, we didn't dare... talk back to our parents.
Well, in
just
our
like
day, if
our
you
day,
to copy
did...
somebody to give it to some something to give it to somebody, you had to have a chisel and a hammer and a big
yeah.
rock.
Yeah. I mean, it just, you know, they yeah. just take it for granted. Oh, no, that's my right to do it. No, it's not.
Right.
Well, okay.
It is your right to get arrested when you do it.
Yeah,
congratulations.
We have to take a similar position. It's not our place to be the police. If you want to break the law, okay, go yeah. ahead. But don't complain to me when we have to keep fixing your computer because you broke it again.
Yeah.
Right.
And yeah. then they sit there and then they'll sit there and try to say, well, no, she was only in. She said she was only in it a couple of times. And
all right,
then
so,
I can show the right. log.
Well, see, you could be there
they've
one.
Been in it the past 2 weeks.
But you could be on it one time and download 1,000 things, most of which are junk.
Yes.
Right.
You think it's the song you want to download. You click on it and it doesn't work.
And you think, well, I had a bad download.
Right. No, yeah. it worked and it infected you.
Exactly. Yeah. You yeah. now are stuck.
I like the bands that put out their own music and upload them into the peer networks, and it plays for the first 10 seconds or so, and then the band people come on, and thank you for stealing our music. Do you know we're trying to make a living here
yeah.
and feed our families? And
but again, you know, it was just this utter frustration that, I feel bad because, yes, they were just in, you know, a while ago. You got to charge them again for something that I had already done, told them how to do it, and then you got this snibbly little kid, teenager,
right.
sitting there, more or less, Tom, flipping her hand off at me, and it's like, you want to.
You know, here's the thing. Here's the thing. My daughter knows if I catch her stealing music, she's grounded till she's 47. She knows that. She also knows that I have made a deal with her. If she keeps her machine clean and I check it, I will buy her one song from iTunes every week.
You're rewarding the wanted behavior.
If she wants other songs, she can spend her allowance on that. She actually likes to buy the CDs because she gets the lyrics and stuff.
The photos?
Yeah, the photos and the lyrics and all the insert things. So she likes that. But
liner
it's because
notes.
I taught her to do that. That's why.
Sure.
And if you don't have enough backbone to be a parent, there really ought to be, like, some sort of test.
And may I say, there are so many ways to get free music legitimately on the internet.
Well,
why is anybody stealing?
And yes. it's only 99 cents a song. Jeez and crackers. They'd probably give this kid $300 a month to go
like
buy
Steve
games
said,
for the
though,
PS.
You wouldn't right. go into the store.
Man, all right. We're done. Got to take... All
See,
right.
I told
we're,
you, you guys would...
All right, you guys, put away your footage. Ah, the heck with it. We're done with Uncle Dave for another week. Hell with it all. We're done with that.
Thanks,
all right,
Uncle
we need
Dave.
To take... We've got time for a call, Jessica. We don't have time for anything at this moment. All right, so what you're saying is we're actually done. We're done with this segment. All right, I want to apologize to everybody we didn't get to. We'll get to you after the next hour. We're Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Whew. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We're Soundbites. We got people on the line, but before we get to them real quickly, let me just talk a little bit about what goes on at our website at soundbites.org. Every week we do a poll. Last week's poll was about, do you still buy commercial software? 247 of you voted, tying for number 283 in the all-time hit list. And the winner is Love My Free Apps, followed by Free Apps and Free OS, the Linux baby, followed by, oh, yes, I can't wait to give more money to Microsoft and others. This week's poll is an interesting news article. Microsoft on Thursday told Excel users that one of the 12 patches issued on Tuesday causes the spreadsheet to make mistakes in some calculations. In a warning posted Thursday, Bill Sisk, the security response to communications manager for Microsoft, said that the fixes outlined in the MS-08014 bulletin causes Microsoft Excel 2003 calculations to return an incorrect result when a real-time data source is used. According to a more detailed edition, Excel 2003 Service Pack 2, SP2, and Excel 2003 Service Pack 3 return an incorrect result, usually zero, when a real-time data source is used in a Visual Basic for applications, function, or macro. Real-time data was added to Excel in the 2002 version and allows users to have data automatically pushed into a spreadsheet from a variety of sources, including websites. Our teams are testing a fix and release it once it meets our quality bar for broad distribution, which means at least a month. In the meantime, Microsoft suggested that any users who are actually doing that stop doing it. On Tuesday, Microsoft did roll out four security bulletins that patched a dozen vulnerabilities, all of them in Office, including seven critical bugs in Excel. Microsoft did not specify which of the seven fixes broke Excel's calculations. One of the patches deployed Tuesday fixed an Excel flaw that has been exploited for at least 2 months in targeted attacks. So the question of the month is, of the week is, are you surprised that a Microsoft update caused a different problem? The choices are very, not very. I was shocked there was only one, the Macintosh and the Linux. So far, we have, I don't even know how many we have. I'm about to find out, though. We have 104 people who have voted in the poll, and I was shocked there was only one is the number one vote. Now, I know that just clicking on a link is not enough for you, so luckily you folks, underneath the poll, you'll see a yellow box. If you click on Give Us Your Opinion, it takes you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Very nice. Where you can actually submit an opinion. So please do that. And then take a look around at my website. I put out a newsletter a few times a week. If you're a member, you can get into the forums, read the newsletter, search old tips and tricks, rants and raves, websites of the week, Q&As, everything that I've got there, tens of thousands of individual files to check through. I believe that alone is well worth the $15 a year I'm charging for that. And then come on back and join us at the website at Soundbites for all the neat things we do, including talking to folks on the phone, starting with Chris from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Chris. What's your question? Thank you for holding.
Oh, no problem. How are you guys doing?
Good. Great. How are you?
I have a HP. It's a TV9000 dual core AMD 64-bit. Mm-hmm. And I've had it for about 9 months. I had Microsoft accounting on there, having problems, just bought QuickBooks, uninstalled the Microsoft accounting, and according from all the forms and everything on QuickBooks' website,
it doesn't work with Vista.
Something is saying something with the framework, that there's a problem with the framework.
Yeah, they announced that the day Vista came out, QuickBooks came out that same day and said, do not try to use our software on Vista. It will not work. It will corrupt your data.
And in a year, they haven't released a patch?
Nobody's releasing patches for Vista. Everybody's waiting for Windows 7. Yeah. I mean look at the number of drivers that are not available. Look at the number of programs that are not available. Look at the number of patches that are not available. Microsoft internally is literally telling their developers, yeah, really, it's Windows 7
now. We got to move on. We got to move on. They got to come out with a product that gives folks, one, reasons to move over to it, and it's still got to work. Like when we went from 98 to XP, all your software still worked?
Yep.
According to the Intuit's website, QuickBooks Pro 2007 does work with Vista.
Right, because I called them before. I made sure that I called before, and they said, no, everything's been resolved with this. There's no problems. That's the only reason why I went ahead when I got there.
Did you download an update?
It loads onto the computer fine, goes to start, and then won't start.
How much memory do you have to manually download one of the patches. Let me see what patch they're up to,
Chris,
now.
Chris, how much memory do you have in this machine?
1 gig.
All right, and how's the graphics?
I actually turned everything down because I thought that may have been a problem.
Did you get the 2007 version or the 2008 version?
2008, which said the same thing that it was compatible.
They're up to release 5. You can go to Intuit's website and manually download the release 5 patch. That may help.
Okay. Then I said, just for curiosity, you said the framework. I tried reinstalling Microsoft accounting. I had the same error. My question is, how do you repair? I tried doing a system restore going back a month, and I'm getting that the and that framework is
I just found a link into its website on how to repair the Microsoft.NET framework.
Yeah, I tried that. And
it's a long and complicated procedure.
Yeah, and it didn't work. I went through it. Basically, all it was saying is run it corrupt and then try reinstalling it. So I downloaded 2.0, tried reinstalling it, saying that it's already on the computer. So I tried downloading 3.5.
Mm-hmm.
That went in with no problem. Then further reading on the forums, you have to have 2.0 completely removed, but you can't remove it through add remove programs. And I couldn't find anything else on how to remove it or repair it.
Mm.
It's not in add or removed in Vista.
Well, no, that would have made it easy.
Right, because it's actually built into the operating system.
Yeah,
because
it, well, it probably
it's embedded, yeah.
Yeah, it's part of the system. So, and then, of course, HP doesn't give you any, I can't even wipe out the computer to try to do a fresh install of the entire system.
They didn't give you restore disk?
No, they don't give them to you anymore.
Well, it's on an invisible partition. If, what is it, Control F11? Gets into the restore partition on the hard drive. You don't get physical disks, but there should be a restore partition.
Correct. Yes, yes.
What happens if the hard drive dies? You're hosed.
No, you have to buy a new hard drive from HP, and they send it with the restore partition already there.
And they're going to nail you good for that.
Yep. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There is an uninstall bug. According to Microsoft, there is an uninstall bug.
Feature.
Sure. It leaves behind a registry key and a couple of other things, and basically kind of...
You may tell you you're hosed. You may want to go and get the Windows XP update.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. According to ASP.NET, everybody's having the same exact problem.
Yeah.
And this
everyone that says that they're redoing the .NET framework, then they're not having a problem and everything's working fine. Everyone's just saying, yeah, redid the framework, but I can't find anything on how to redo the framework, and everything I've tried hasn't worked. Because I tried reinstalling it, downloading and reinstalling it, and it doesn't allow you to do it. It stops you saying it's already on there.
Hmm. MSDN, the Microsoft Developer Network, has their own set of blogs, and there's a guy who's put up his steps that he uses to remove that. We will post those during the break.
Okay.
If that helps you.
That's the best I got for you right at the moment.
I appreciate it, guys.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks. All right.
And this is more than a year later.
Yeah.
The Microsoft screwed up so bad that third-party companies still can't get it to work right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Our next caller is Victor from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Victor. What's your question?
I'm running an AVG 8.0 antivirus, and the completed scan showed there were 209 warnings. Now, what do I do now?
It'll just
read what the warning says, and it should give you a suggestion about what to do about it.
Most of the time, it'll move them over into the vault.
Okay, all it says on this, the scan results, it says they're potentially dangerous objects, and it gives you a choice to remove them, or if you want, should I remove them?
Yeah, remove them.
Okay.
When in doubt, get rid of them. They're junk anyways.
All right, beautiful.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Bye.
There you go.
See, now that would have been cool if he was like Victor from Victor.
Yeah, that would have been good.
Other callers.
That would have been good. Our next caller is Sal from Fairport, New York. Hi, Sal. What's up?
Hey, guys. MacBook Pro with Tiger. Trying to log into an N router network, and it's giving me error messages. It logs on to other router, other networks without any problem. Tried repair permission. Tried using the assistant for the networking.
What brand of N router?
Remember back now. It's Netgear.
Okay, that's the problem. N is not a completed standard, so everybody's N is just a little bit different.
Okay.
So trying to get one company's N card to talk to another company's N router is hit or miss.
Okay.
Of course, Apple's cards work best with Apple routers, and Netgear's cards work best with Netgear's routers, etc. So if it doesn't work, that's probably correct.
Okay,
and,
so
and
have to wait for...
is it the WGT624V3?
Trying to remember.
Well, it doesn't matter. The point is there is firmware available.
Yeah, you can check your airport.
KBServer.netgear.com
okay.
has updated firmware. If you update the router's firmware, theoretically that will fix it.
Okay.
Right, as the N standard. I think we're in draft 2 now. So
right, exactly.
A lot of companies updated
standard.
It. Yep.
Yeah. And that's... Okay. Thank you. That, of course, in general, continues to be the problem. People want to jump on bandwagons like Ann, and they're just not ready for prime time. They're still in beta. Well, you know what? Really, if you use beta code, you have to expect that it will break.
Hello, right. They warn you. Beta is test.
So match the card you have in your computer with the router that you buy, and that'll always work the best.
Well, until you update the router software, and then maybe it breaks the card.
The card, then you got to update the card software.
Right, exactly.
Back and forth.
So you got to be careful. We're going to take a little break. We will be back in just a couple of moments with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Chris Reich, with Jessica Sawyer, who's just doing an outstanding job.
And she's cuter than
for
Rob.
Us. Well, Jessica's very cute, but saying she's cuter than Rob isn't saying a lot. I'm Nick Francesco. It is 19 minutes after the hour, and we will be back on the other side of the news, other side of the ads with Soundbite. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Wright.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And at 23 minutes, no, you're the great Jessica Sawyer, and don't you forget it. It's 23 minutes after the hour, and we are Soundbites. Hey, guess what? Microsoft Chairman Bill Gates clearly got through to some politicians with his plea for more H-1B visas on Capitol Hill earlier this week. Last Thursday, a U.S. House of Representatives Democrat in the Science and Technology Committee, which Gates addressed, introduced a bill that would double the number of H-1B visas and remove other restrictions from 2008 onward. Then on Friday, a key House Republican followed with his own proposal for emergency relief. His plan, tripling the visa cap. H-1Bs allow foreigners with at least a bachelor's degree in their area of specialty to be employed in the United States for up to 6 years. Right now, the cap stands at 65,000 with another 20,000 for foreigners with advanced degrees from U.S. schools. The first bill, sponsored by Representative Gabrielle Giffords, a Democrat of Arizona, would bump the cap to 130,000 beginning in 2008, increase it to as much as 180,000 if the limit is reached in the preceding year. At the same time, it would potentially allow many foreigners, as the bill would exempt from that cap anyone who has received a master's or doctorate from a U.S. university in math, science, engineering, and other technology fields. Up to 20,000 extra visas would also be allotted to people who had obtained such degrees from institutions outside the United States. The second bill, called the Strengthening United States Technology and Innovation Now, or SUSTAIN Act, is even more aggressive, proposed by House Judiciary Committee Ranking Member Lamar Smith, Republican of Texas. It would raise the visa cap to 195,000 in 2008 and 2009, the highest level since its peak between 2001 and 2003. Both bills are meant to address what technology companies say is a visa shortage crisis. They're also more aggressive than other recent attempts to increase the H-1B cap, which sets a 115,000 visa target. Gates and other technology company executives have long said they need the ability to hire more foreigners, both on temporary visas and permanent green cards, to fill gaps for which they can't find qualified Americans. Gates maintained that H-1B visa holders at his company receive high wages, prevent jobs from being moved offshore. Last year, the run on H-1B visas ended one day after it began. The problem is, the setup of the H-1B program has landed a fair share of criticism from American programmers who argue that visas depress their wages and displace qualified American workers. There are also allegations that the offshore firms, particularly Indian ones, have been snapping up H-1B visas, recruiting foreign workers, and outsourcing them to foreign companies. What Bill Gates is saying is that he cannot find intelligent Americans. I believe he is not looking correctly.
Willing to work for lower wages.
That's the real issue. If you hire an H-1B person, you can pay them a lot less than you would pay a similarly qualified American, and therefore you save on your wages.
But I
so
read
what
about,
they're really saying is we think Americans aren't worth the money, and we would rather hire other people at lower wages.
Yeah, I think I read somewhere about the average Indian college graduate earns $1,000 a month. Mm-hmm. A month, lives on half of it in the capital city of New Delhi, and sends half the money back home to his parents' village.
Yep.
So living well on, and that this is a good income in India, $500 a month.
Right. The thing is, I have a friend, one of my ex-students, who actually had to leave the U.S. because her visa ran out, couldn't get another one. She was a very well thought of person at Microsoft, as a matter of fact. And they were going to put her in charge of all kinds of nifty things. I believe the exchange server was one of them. And she just lost her visa because they couldn't afford it. Now I'd love to see her come back to the stage. She's a sweetheart. She deserves everything she gets. But the reality is that there are a whole bunch of Americans without jobs, many of whom are qualified to take these jobs, but places like Microsoft just don't want to pay their wages. And that kind of porks me off. All right. We've done our rant for the day. We're moving on to Mike from Victor, New York. Welcome, Mike. What's your question?
Yeah, when it comes to Microsoft, I could rant and rave all day. And actually, that gentleman called about the Net Framework. Good luck to him, but he should get on a call to Microsoft. They actually have decent service techs. And they've told me, I've told you guys this before, not to get Vista.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's the irony. Microsoft is telling you not to buy Vista. They're a flagship program.
And I'm wondering why there isn't an investigation in regards to that, to them putting out such a faulty product. I mean, because everybody's having a hard time
with
it.
Well, no. See, there we go. It says right on the license that they're not liable for any damages.
Oh, of course not.
Yeah. CYA.
Yep.
Hey, here's the question. When I start up, when the wallpaper pops up, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful picture. It's clear. And then it does a startup, it runs the programs, and then it disappears. The wallpaper flashes off. It comes back, and it's pixelated. It's not extremely pixelated, but it's definitely different than the picture I had prior. I'm wondering, what do I have to do? Maybe
have you checked for updated video drivers?
That's what I'm thinking. Should I uninstall a video driver? I mean,
no,
like
you don't necessarily have to uninstall. If you go to the website for that particular video card, and just see if they've got any updates, you can install that over it.
Yeah, I've done that. I've done all that and whatnot. But like I said, when it first comes on, the wallpaper.
The other thing may well be, Mike, that you're running your video card at, is this a laptop or a desktop?
It's a desktop, XP.
Is it a flat panel monitor or a CRT?
It's a CRT. It's an older one, but it's a big clear screen. I mean,
you may be running the desktop at a resolution that isn't optimum for the...
What resolution are you running?
I'm not really sure. I think 720 or something. I can check it out.
When Windows boots, the monitor runs at 640 by 480. So if you have a small picture, it looks fine. True. And then when you get down to your desktop and if it jumps up to 1024 by 768, then the picture has to get stretched and elongated and can pixelize.
Try 800 by 600.
Try some different pictures and see if that helps too.
Okay,
it may just be that one picture.
Do you think maybe it's loading a different driver? Seeing how it's loading up when it boots up.
Yes,
first?
It definitely is loading a different driver when Windows first boots.
For that
boots,
particular resolution.
Right. When Windows first boots, it loads a generic VGA driver at 640 by 480.
Okay.
And then when the desktop starts loading, it loads your specific driver for your specific video card.
Yep. It's just like if you took a picture and zoomed into it, it would get pixelated.
Right.
Same idea.
Right.
It's got to stretch it to match the screen. You're zooming in and seeing some of the pixels. If you can find a picture that matches your resolution, a 1024 by 768 or whatever that may be, there's a million sites where you can find wallpaper.
Mm-hmm.
So you pick one that's either, well, ideally is the same size as your resolution.
Okay, yeah, I'm on my display settings right now.
There you go.
And I'm at 1280 by 1024.
Right. And so if you've got a 640 by 480, you move it up to 1280 by 1024, you've doubled the size, more than doubled the size, and consequently, it's going to look very odd.
You need quadruple the resolution.
And the driver might not be able to handle it correctly.
So you said run 1024, 768?
No, run what you've got, but find a picture with that resolution.
Oh, okay.
There's 100 sites on the net where you can download backgrounds, whatever picture you've got. You will find that one or a comparable one at the size you need.
If you drop the resolution of the monitor, the picture will look better, but you'll have less desktops.
Yeah, I just want to figure out how to get back to that original driver.
Again, it's not a driver.
The wallpaper disappears. Like I said,
it's not. I understand this, Mike. Really, we see it 100 times a day when we reboot. It's not a driver issue.
Okay.
It's the fact that you have a nice high resolution so you can get lots of stuff on your desktop, but a picture that is only designed for a very low resolution. You've got two choices. You can either lose most of your desktop and the picture looks nice, or you can keep your nice desktop and find that picture in a higher resolution. Those are your only two choices.
Yep. Okay.
Okey-doke. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
We see that a lot where people set their camera to fit more pictures on the card. So you get this nice 10-megapixel camera, but the one, you know, the card...
They drop the resolution.
Yeah, the card it comes with, you can only fit one picture, so they'll drop it down to a 1-megapixel, you know, and then you can get 100 pictures on the card, but then you can't blow it up any bigger than postage stamp size.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. So, you know, there's no magic. You got to do what you got to do. I think I missed a call somewhere in my call list here. Our next caller is Jim from Hilton, New York. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Hello. Good afternoon. Years ago, my wife and I bought a HP that had Millennium on them. We had a lot of trouble with it. And
yeah.
After our discussion, we actually got a hold of Carly Fiorino, who was the head of HP at the time. she actually let them upgrade us for nothing to XP, I believe it was at the time.
Nice.
Yeah, that's nice. But now my grandson's on his way out to buy a laptop, and we've heard some horrendous things about Vista, and he's got a choice between a Microsoft HP with Vista on it or a Mac. What do you recommend?
Depends on what
the Mac
school.
In that case, but what you can
on school.
You can get PCs with XP still on it. You just sometimes have to look a little harder.
I see, but I mean, if these were the only choices, the HP.
Yeah, you can get a Vista machine that may not work, or you can get a Mac that may be different than what you're used to.
Right.
But yeah, what kind of school is he going to, and what is he going to study?
That's the most important thing. He should talk to the folks at the bookstore in the school he's going to.
Okay.
Find out what they recommend, and he should also talk to his department in the school he's going to.
Okay.
Do they all use Windows? Are they going to give him some proprietary programs?
Yeah, most schools do both these days.
Okay.
Right. But the point is, for example, in our business school, we have some programs that we give out that are only available under Windows.
If
can't
he's
help
getting,
that.
If he's, well, you can run Windows on your Mac if you have to. Well, but if he's getting into anything that we call content creation, you know, graphics or video or movies or film or things like that, that's a really big strong suit of the Mac. And in those types of industries, the Mac is very predominant.
Well, his field is golf. So.
You're the guy in the golf scholarship.
Yeah, excellent. Good for you.
Yeah, so I don't know if he'd be concerned about anything other than the audio or visual kind of things.
Macs are very good for that. And, and again, he needs to check with his department as to if they have a preference, and it's no. If they have a reason as opposed to a preference, he should go with the reason. If they just have a preference, buy what you like.
Okay.
All right, thanks.
Thank you, guys.
Yep. It's that eternal question, and it really comes down to what's your support group.
Yep. And they got to set it up for them to get on the network and do everything else. So.
Right.
And don't let them say you can't put a Mac on a Windows network.
Oh, yeah.
You can. Really.
We do it all day long.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's just sometimes folks being too lazy.
Yep.
In fact, my MacBook Pro gets on my network easier than my Vista box.
Yep.
Just, I have to say that.
Yeah.
All right, we are going to take
Anything gets on better. Yeah. I think even Windows NE will go on.
Once again, damning with faint praise. Vista is, or rather, Mac is cuter than Rob Linton. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Look, if he's not going to be here to defend himself, it's just no fun.
Yeah.
And there is no defense.
I know.
Right.
We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, the mighty Jessica Sawyer, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you. It is 35 minutes after the hour, and you are listening to the greatest and possibly the greatest confusing computer show in the known universe, Soundbite. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And at 39 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. We are Soundbites. Soundbite. All right, a noted ActiveX researcher on Monday revealed a bug in Real Network's Real Player that could be exploited by attackers to hijack Windows machines running Internet Explorer. Elazar Broad, who has uncovered other ActiveX control vulnerabilities in MySpace, Facebook, and Yahoo software in the last 2 months, posted findings to the Full Disclosure Security mailing list on Monday that fingered RealPlayer as flawed. It is possible to modify heap blocks after they've been freed and overwrite certain registers, possibly allowing code execution. He also posted proof of concept attack code. Danish vulnerability tracker Secunia rated the RealPlayer bug as highly critical, its second highest ranking. It said that the flawed ActiveX control can be exploited by using the usual method of tricking users into visiting malicious or compromised websites. Secunia confirmed the vulnerability and added that at a minimum, the newest build of RealPlayer 11 is buggy. Other earlier versions may be too. The bug is an ActiveX control, which means that only Internet Explorer users are at risk. ActiveX, though widely used by Microsoft Corporation to add what they call functionality to their browser, has been plagued with a huge number of vulnerabilities. According to Symantec, 89% of the more than 230 browser plugin bugs tallied in the first half of 2007 were ActiveX flaws. Some security professionals, in fact, have called for users to ditch ActiveX.
We've been calling for that for years.
There is no patch for the real player vulnerability. Alternatively, your best bet is to switch to Firefox or Opera, which do not rely on ActiveX, and therefore you will be a little better off. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Alta in Webster, New York. Welcome, Alta. What's your question?
My question is that we
installed a new Norton in a PC, and since we've installed that, I did not receive some of the emails because they weren't on my list.
Right.
And I usually got them, but someone said that they think it's spam. The computer thinks it's spam and put them somewhere. And I do get a message that some items may be hidden.
Right.
Where, how do I go to get it from AT&T?
Well, it's not at AT&T anymore. Right. Your computer downloaded it. And
somewhere's on your computer.
Right, your Norton program has apparently misflagged it as spam. So you have to go into your Norton program. Was that part of Internet Security that their spam filter is? So you have to go into that program and find out where it puts the spam so that you can mark it as not spam
or
and
what
it,
you
and
could,
it comes in anymore.
Sometimes too. What I found it easier, because folks have trouble determining what is just to clear all the filters. In other words, you can flush
like,
it and
turn
say,
off the spam filter so it lets everything through.
Well, or no, you can flush it so it starts over. So you'll have to retrain it. But if you're just starting out with it and, you know, it's deleting some stuff that you really want, you can flush it and tell it, relearn. So that whole list that you had that was in there, I'm finding it easier for folks than trying to go through because they're not sure which ones are right and which ones aren't. So it's easier just to flush it out, say, start over. Let me decide again which ones are junk and which ones are good.
Now, there should be a this is not spam button inside the Norton program. When you click on a message that isn't spam, you can train it. That's the problem with spam is the computer doesn't know what you think spam is.
Oh,
so you have to train it what you think spam is. And sometimes it gets a little over aggressive and marking things that aren't spam. So you have to train it what not spam is.
And Norton does, like you said, goes to the extreme. It thinks everything is spam.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much.
Okay.
We'll see what happens.
All righty. Good luck. Let us know.
Bye.
Right. All right. Our next caller is Colleen from Perry, New York. Welcome, Colleen. What's your question?
Oh, hi, folks. Well, I'm going to tell you my immediate problem first. I can't shut the computer off because when I click on start, usually there comes, you know, the little box pops up with restart and shut those windows off.
Yeah.
Yep.
That doesn't come up anymore. And now I'm going to tell you how I got there.
Okay.
If I can.
Yeah.
I'm the one that's called in before saying that I had problems of getting updates for SpyBot and Super Anti-Spyware and things like that. And I know before that I have turned off the remote assistant thing, and something keeps on turning it back on. So when I was trying to get my updates this time, I went to check that, and remote assistant was turned back on, and I turned it off again, and then I went to the advanced things and turned on the security logging thing, and that seems to be when the problem started. All of the little icons on the desktop, instead of the little pictures now, they're just the default things that come off the little blue screen icons instead of the pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went to shut the computer down, I can't because that shutdown box isn't there.
Have you tried turning the security thing off again?
Yes, I did. And when I clicked on that to turn it off, I got a box that time saying, if you change any of these settings, that some programs might stop working.
Yeah.
But I didn't get that the first time when I changed it.
Well, still, and what did you say?
I said yes to change it back.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing is different. I still can't. I still don't have the...
I got a feeling that you've got some other spyware or Trojans in there that are playing havoc with your machine that...
Right.
Now, if it's not letting you make a change and notifying you something else is going on in that machine, you know, you might want to take it to some place, reputable place, and have them take a look at it because you definitely have something going on in there.
Okay. My immediate problem, though, is it's not going to shut off.
Right, because some other program is holding your machine hostage.
So in
essence, it doesn't want it to shut down.
You're going to have to crash the computer to turn the power off, which...
Okay.
Hopefully won't cause much more damage than there already is.
Uh-huh.
Generally speaking, that's something you want to avoid at all costs, just pulling the plug because that can damage the computer and corrupt your files.
Right.
But if that's your last resort, then that's about all you can do.
Yeah.
There's another shutdown. Where is it? Task Manager. Control-Alt-Delete?
Yeah, Control-Alt-Delete. You do the three-finger salute. Control-Alt-Delete, right in the center under
that
tool,
brings up task manager.
Right in the center under it's under tools, you can say shut down. Mm-hmm. And try that. Then that forces all the processes to literally exit out.
Uh-huh.
But if you've got a program in there, say like JS Downloader or one of these other keyloggers, it's trying to still control your machine, and that's why it doesn't want to shut down. It doesn't want to let go because it's busy doing its thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Okay.
All righty.
I'll probably be in the end. See you, Dave.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Colleen.
Catch you later, Colleen.
Bye.
Our next caller is Bill from Marion, New York. Welcome, Bill. What's your question?
How you doing, guys?
Good. How are you?
Listen, I got a question. I got an ASUS motherboard.
Mm-hmm.
I'm running Vista, 32-bit.
Okay.
I had 2 megs of RAM.
You mean 2 gig?
To start with 2 gigs. I'm sorry.
You're the one that usually does that, Dave.
Hey, I did.
And I wanted to go to 3 gigs, so I went and bought 2 more identical to the first set, 512s, and put them in. So now I have 4 sticks of RAM in there, totaling 3 gigabytes. But the computer only shows 2.5.
Wait a minute.
What OS are you running?
Vista 32.
Yeah, that's your problem.
Yeah, do you have a dedicated graphics card? Or are you using the onboard?
No, dedicated.
Yeah, there's 2 problems. It could be shared video, or you need to go to Vista 64 to utilize more than 2 gigs, isn't
yeah.
it? 3 gigs? Somewhere in there.
Somewhere around 2.5 gigs.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Could also be the motherboard won't accept 512s past the first.
Or the motherboard may be peaked at 2.5.
That new of a motherboard, it should.
Yeah,
it should.
Yeah, it's one of those M2NE.
Well, wait, yeah, that's a good point. How do you have 4 identical sticks at 3 gigs?
Yeah, how do you get 4 at 3 gigs?
Two ones and 2 512s would be right. 3.
Right.
So that's 2 sets of 2 identical, not 4 identical?
Oh, well, okay, yeah. Well, I know what I meant was the manufacturer was the same.
Oh, that doesn't matter.
Oh, no?
No.
Yeah. No, but you might hit...
Yes, so it's probably the Vista 32 problem.
Right, yep. And you said you have dedicated graphics?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm running 2 512 cards.
Okay.
SLI cards? No, for SLI.
It may simply be that, Windows only... A 32-bit version of Windows will only go so far. We got to take a break. Back in just a couple of moments with the greatest computer show in the known universe. It is 49 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Sound Bites. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And at 53 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Sound Bites. Our next caller is Mary from Rochester. Welcome, Mary. What's your question?
Well, hello there, guys. It's Marcy. No problem. I'm sorry, Marcy. No problem. See, I got a question. You did say something once upon a time about starting an exo support group. Oh, so when?
A witch?
The Martians have arrived in the house, and now we have questions which I don't feel like flogging to Wiki to get answers on.
Of a witch support group?
EXO, the little...
Yeah. Well, I love my EXO. There is a group that's talking about starting up. There are some professorial types meeting at RIT now, but I haven't heard yet. About a group for the individual user. The problem is that the EXO by itself is, it's really designed to be a community device, and having just one that's not in a mesh network or whatever.
You can't have one telephone.
Right.
You might want to define what the EXO is.
Oh, the EXO is the one laptop per child. It's the little green computer that Nicholas Negroponte at laptop.org is selling to third world countries and Birmingham, Alabama, by the way. Well, after Katrina, which hit Alabama actually harder than it hit New Orleans, a lot of those kids still haven't got school, still haven't got anything going, so they're selling them to Atlanta as well.
Ooh.
But I haven't heard of any local group. If there is anyone who is part of a local OLPC or XO user group, we would be delighted to hear about them, but I haven't heard of one yet. But Marcy, I promise you, as soon as we know, you'll know.
Well, I have a little question then, because I've noticed that when I've got my wireless up and running and I'm on my laptop, I can find them out there as an ad hoc connection. Now I can connect to them, but what I can do with that, not a thing. Now, of course, they can't see me because I don't have ad hoc, whatever, I guess.
Yeah, right. The problem is you can either be hooked to a wireless network or to the mesh network.
Right, one or the other.
But not both, yeah. Yeah.
Which is a good thing, actually, because I can just see all kinds of problems and security on that
one. Well, exactly. Exactly.
But I was wondering, is there any way that I could talk to my kids with my laptop? Probably not.
Well,
I don't know how.
Yeah. Once you connect to Wi-Fi, it comes with Skype, which lets you do audio. And
when did it come with Skype?
What? Really?
Yeah.
No, you can download Skype for it.
I thought it came.
No. It comes with a chat program.
I thought it came with Skype and you could download video Skype. Okay.
Oh.
You can download Skype.
Okay.
But it comes with a chat program that you can do instant messaging with.
Oh.
And it comes, there's an emailing program in there too, right?
Well, you can get Gmail.
Right. You can get Gmail and stuff like that. And that's the way to do that.
Okay. So just chat through Gmail then?
Well, you can chat through any of those things. The OLPC wiki at wiki.laptop.org will give you a lot of that stuff. I don't know that Skype is at all available. I guess it is available.
No, I hear him talking about that on other shows all
you
the time.
You can install it. It doesn't come with it. But there are, you can do instant messaging. You do a couple of things.
But I can, have to use AIM in order to get to them? Or?
No, it has its own built-in chat client.
What protocol does it use?
Yeah, well, I don't know how I use it on my Windows to talk to them on there.
Right, exactly. Well, if you're using it on Windows, you're not using the XO at all.
No, but I can connect to them on an ad hoc basis, so I'm connected. Whoopee, nothing happens after that.
Well, nothing will happen until you run a program.
Well, I didn't know what kind of program I could run on my...
Here's
the deal,
basically.
Marcy. Let's take this offline. If you go to the Soundbites forum and post a message, I'll try to help you at least a little bit there, but we really need to put together a user group.
Most of the chat programs like AIM and MSN, you launch that program and it connects into their network, and then someone at the other end does the same thing.
So, Marcy, please, let's take this offline because nobody else is an XO. They don't care. But I will find out where to get you a users group and we'll get some stuff done. Our next caller is Rick from Alabama.
Hello, guys.
Are you actually in Alabama?
Yes, I am. I'm in Tuscaloosa right now.
How'd you find out?
In Alabama, the Tuscaloosa.
Well, I'm formerly Canandaigua resident.
Oh, okay.
And I'm moving down here because of a job transfer.
Welcome to America.
Yeah, thanks.
Tuscaloosa's calling me, but I'm not going. What's your question, Rick?
Well, hey, I'm because of the job, I'm now tethered to a laptop, and it's my lifeline. And I just want to get some advice on all the things I should do to protect myself here as far as backing up files. And
what the first thing you need to do is buy yourself an external hard drive that plugs into the USB port.
Okay.
And daily back up all your files to it.
Yep.
Okay.
Every night when you come home from work, you've been doing work all day, you've got stuff on this thing. First thing you want to do is connect and copy over all those new files to that external hard drive so they are always there.
Okay.
And that's the place to start. The next thing is make sure you've got antivirus and all of those other things.
Yep, got all that.
And unfortunately, we're out of time. Rick, you got to call earlier next week. I want to thank Dave and Steven, Rick and Jessica, and Chris. It's Soundbites. We're gone. Thanks. He's calling from Alabama.